Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 140, entitled How to Manage Risk in Dating and Choose the Right Woman to Be With, I chat with Dr. Sean Smith. Dr. Sean Smith is a clinical psychologist, author, and relationship expert, and in today's episode, he talks about how to manage risk in dating, weed out problematic women, and end up with a long-term partner that will complement you well. He shares with us his practical tips for what to avoid when dating, how to spot the early warning signs that some women display, how to deal with women who have emotional and psychological issues, and ultimately, how to find the one. If you're wondering how to successfully traverse the dating and relationship arena and find a woman that you not only love, but that fits you well long term, check this episode out now. You're going to love it. Hey, here's a quick reminder to head on over to naturaldatingblueprint.com and check out the best dating course in the world. We've got over 13 and a half hours of unbelievable action-packed video content inside the Natural Dating Blueprint course, and we break down everything you need to know when it comes to meeting, attracting, and dating just about any woman you want, and all while being yourself. That's why we call it the Natural Dating Blueprint. Sign up for the free training as well at naturaldatingblueprint.com. It's a free one-hour training. We break down a ton of awesome content in and of itself, give you a sneak peek into the course, and if you do choose to sign up, which I highly recommend, we give you a 33% off exclusive discount into the course right now. So again, that's naturaldatingblueprint.com. Do not miss out on this incredible deal. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Sean Smith. Sean, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so for those listeners who aren't as familiar with some of the work you do, can you just quickly talk about kind of what your profession is? And I guess when someone asks you kind of, Sean, what you do, what is it that you do? What do you describe to them? What's your title and kind of how'd you come about doing that, man?
I'm a clinical psychologist, and I'm in Denver, Colorado, and I started out my private practice about 11 years ago after I got my doctorate, working mainly with anxiety disorders and sort of the run-of-the-mill stuff, and worked my way more in toward working with couples because it's fascinating work and it's pretty rewarding work. And as I was doing it, I worked more and more with guys and got into their stories about how their relationships had developed and how they'd gone well or how they'd fallen apart and so forth. And to answer your question about how I started this, I grew up in my father's bar. He bought it when I was 9 years old, and I worked there for 6 or 7 years on nights and weekends, and just developed this fascination with people and what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And ever since then, you realized you wanted to become a shrink?
Yeah. Well, that was the path that I was on, I guess, is learning as much as I could about what motivates people.
Yeah. No, I've been fascinated with this, too, as well, for years. Just the human mind and, well, the brain, I guess, like the physiology of the brain, but also the psychology of the brain and how it works and how people think and what makes them tick. I've always been fascinated with that as well, and kind of like the mentalist side of things, like the Sherlock Holmes, like figuring out like people's behaviors and things like that have always deeply interested me. And of course, I mentioned this to you a few minutes ago, Sean, of course, like having the issues with anxiety in my past and depression and like stress-related problems and confidence issues and just things like that, it makes you, I guess, people who have gone through that, I don't know if you have this experience as well, but people who have gone through anxiety or panic attacks, problems like that, I think it gives them a better appreciation for how the mind works and also makes them want to figure it out more, like kind of so you can get a hold of these problems and really understand it. I don't know if you have any experience with anxiety or similar issues like that personally. Is that the case?
Yeah, a little bit. My whole family is a little bit high strung. They tend to be hard workers, pretty smart people, which is not to say that I'm smart. I don't know that I inherited that, but a little bit of anxiety runs through us, so I've dealt with that. But I think that it's been my observation that anybody who goes through any kind of treatment, whether it's drug rehab or recovery from a personality disorder or anxiety or whatever it might be, people tend to become a lot more insightful and a lot more curious about the inner workings.
Yeah, and not only that, I think
it makes them stronger. Like, I honestly do believe that. Like, whenever you face challenges or obstacles or illnesses, diseases, when you can overcome those types of things, it just, it gives you a different perspective on life, and it also makes you, in some way, shape, or form, a stronger individual. And that's been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
But today, man, I know you're kind of dealing, like you mentioned a moment ago, with you talk about anxiety disorders and relationships and working with couples a lot. And I think this has kind of shaped the latest book you came out with, The Tactical Guide to Women, How Men Can Manage Risk in Dating and Marriage, and some of the other work you've been doing. So today, in today's episode, I want to primarily focus on, I guess, like risk management, finding the right partner, making sure the signs early on for getting in a relationship with a partner is right, and kind of that sort of thing. All right, so let's kind of break this down. Where do we start with meeting people? What are some of the signs that when you connect with a person, you go out on a date with a woman? I mean, this is primarily a guy podcast, of course. So when you go out on a date with a woman, what are some of the signs that this is the one, or this could be the one, or some of the early, I guess, cues that this could be someone special to potentially get into a relationship with?
Well, I guess I would back it up a little bit and say that it's hard to know right at the beginning. Guys in particular, it's a little bit counterintuitive, but we are vulnerable to women earlier than they're vulnerable to us, meaning we fall in love quicker. And I don't know how you would quantify that. We get territorial, or we get interested, or we start to get attached in a way that women don't. We do it faster. So that sets us up for a whole lot of problems. It sets us up for being chameleons, and it sets us up for lying to ourselves about this woman who's standing in front of us and that we're pursuing. And, you know, there's been a little bit of research lately on the honeymoon phase and how this is a neurochemical event that lasts anywhere between 6 and 18 months, where your neurochemistry deviates from its baseline and you're not seeing the world the way it is when you're first in love with somebody, and she's not seeing the world and she's not seeing you the way she would normally see you. So I guess my first piece of advice is you got to give it time. You got to get past that honeymoon phase before you can really even begin to know how a person's going to react when the chips are down and things get difficult.
How long does that honeymoon phase typically last?
Well, it's really hard to pin down, because when they look at the neurochemistry of it, it's very blunt instruments, and you're sort of looking at neurobiological byproducts of things like serotonin. But somewhere between 6 and 18 months, that's a very big range. Wow. That's the neurochemical answer. But the more straightforward answer, I think, is that when you're dating somebody and you come out of this phase where you're idealizing them and they're idealizing you, and they become more of a real person, meaning that little things are starting to get on your nerves a little bit. And the things that you have set aside in life, your friends, your work, your family a little bit, they start receding back into the they start coming back into the foreground. And you just get the sense that, all right, I'm dating a real person here with some good qualities and some bad qualities, and my life is getting back to normal. That's probably a good indication that you're leaving that honeymoon phase.
Is there any way, is this even possible to avoid the honeymoon phase, or to, I guess, shrink the longevity of it?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I've not been asked that, but I think there are some ways to shrink it, and that would be giving yourself some pretty direct questions about, are you being honest with yourself about her character? And are you being honest with yourself about your motivations and your history and the values that you're bringing to the relationship? One of the things that guys really trip up on is they will bend their values a little bit, or they will tamp their values down or start ignoring their values in the interest of bringing this woman into their life if they're really interested in her. And that comes back to bite you in a really bad way. And it's also you're selling her a bill of goods as too. So I think that being really very brutally honest with yourself about your motivations and her character is a way to shrink that phase.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to too, like, how honest you want to be right away with her. Like, obviously there's a certain level of comfort, of trust that builds up over time, and you know, that just comes with time, and that comes with being with that person and sharing experiences with that person. It's like you want to showcase your best self, but you all, like, there's kind of a threshold, there's a fine line between showcasing your best self and pretending to be somebody that you're really not, right?
Yeah, I think there is, and one of the one of the pieces of advice that I give in the book is there's all this pickup artist advice out there, and some of it's kind of sleazy, some of it's not bad. You know, I'm not opposed to pickup artist books and the pickup artist community, because I think that anything that helps a guy get past the anxiety of approaching a woman is fine and it's good. It's when it gets manipulative and you're starting with the little insults and you're shit testing her and, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And I'm not a big fan of that, because you're presenting something that you're not. But the piece of it, one of the big pieces of advice that I give in this book is, be forthright about who you are. Chase excellence. Don't chase pussy. Be the best man you can be. And then you don't have to put on much of a show when you're trying to get a woman, because you will have the things that women historically look for, which is, you know, a sense of humor and a social network and some sense of mastery in the world. You don't need to hide stuff like that. You can be totally honest about it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree, man. There's definitely a place for the pickup artist philosophy, the PUA community, and they have a lot of good teachings overall. But like you said, I mean, there's things that I don't agree with, the negging type of stuff, the routines, the pickup lines, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a certain point where it gets a little too much and manipulative in a lot of ways. So I advocate, especially being as honest and actually natural as possible. I talk a lot about natural game, and just came out with something called the Natural Dating Blueprint, which, you know, is the whole core, the focus of this is just being your best self, but also being yourself. Like, you don't pretend to be anybody else. You don't pretend to be some pickup artist with a big hat on or goofy jewelry and things like that. You're yourself, but you're confident in expressing who you are and expressing, you know, the things that you like and the things you dislike and that kind of thing. But let's talk about your book, man. I want to bring that up. And so what's the core focus of the book? What are some of the key takeaways about this book that you think are going to resonate with a lot of guys, and some of the things that they might not know about?
Well, I think the approaching relationships in a risk management mindset is really where the book starts and where it ends. Relationships are risky for men. You know, we don't do well in family court if we end up there. We lose families. We're not treated well on campus, respectfully on campus, and I'm not crying victim here. It's just sort of the state of things. But guys have to be very careful, and I think that women throughout the ages, and I say I think because I'm sort of pulling things out of the air here. I'm not a sociologist, but women throughout the ages have had to have very much a risk management mindset about the men that they bring into their lives, because they've had so much at stake. And they've gotten very good, mothers and daughters talking to each other, aunts and nephew or aunts and nieces and friends, having these conversations about being mindful about what does this man mean to you if he long term, if you bring him into your life. And it's only been fairly recently that men have had to be very attentive to this risk management mindset, because, you know, I can give you dozens of stories about guys who have ended up in family court because they chose poorly, they ignored warning signs, they ignored their intuition, they ignored the clear personality problems, and they've had themselves financially and personally devastated. And so, to your question, what are some of the takeaways in the book? I'll give you a quick outline of the book. We start off looking at you, you know, you sizing yourself up as a man. Why are you on this planet? What is your purpose? What are you bringing to a woman? And what is the kind of woman that's going to fit into your life? And then the last two thirds of the book are really about what kind of woman, or what are the basic qualities that a woman needs to have to succeed in a relationship? And what are the mistakes that so many guys make that draw them into bad relationships that you can avoid just by knowing about them?
I guess that first part, when you're talking about looking at you, what are you kind of talking about in that part of the book? What kind of topic do you bring up, and what's the focus on?
Three things. It's history, values, and purpose. So what is your relationship history? What did your old man teach you? What did your mother teach you? What did your role models teach you about relationships, and what are you bringing into this? And that's such an important question, because us men, we're not very good. I'm speaking in John Alice here, but we're not great at thinking about how our history is affecting our decisions. And so we see something bright and shiny and pretty, and we just go for it. We're not thinking about why we're going for it. So really breaking down those lessons that you got, your values, which we already touched on. If you're not clear on your values, which a lot of young guys aren't, it sucks being a guy in your 20s. Trust me, I know, because I've been there. And I wasn't real clear on my values. I knew what I was interested in, but I wasn't real clear on how to make that happen in the world. And so being very clear about what you're doing, because as fun as it might be to have somebody whose values are different than yours, like opposite attracts, that whole thing, the research doesn't bear that out as a good long-term strategy, that if you have conflicting values, which is not different values, but conflicting values, that you're going to end up, you know, if you marry somebody, again, dozens and dozens of stories of guys who've married people, and I give one in the book, married people who have different values and didn't really discover until after the marriage or after the cohabitating that they're really not a good fit. And then they're at that point, sometimes they're kind of screwed. And then your purpose, which is what we were just talking about. Why are you here on the planet? Why are you? What are you doing? Because this is something that is kind of unique to men. Women need a purpose too, but we handle it a little bit differently. We need to know that we have a reason for being on the planet. Societies demand that we have a reason for being on the planet, and it's something that women look for. And if we're not clear about what our purpose is, or if we're not at least moving in that direction toward clarity, then we run the risk of drawing the wrong women into our lives.
The other part, so the second two-thirds of the book or so, is more dedicated to looking at women and thinking of if she's a good fit for you kind of thing. And what are some of the, I guess, signs that you can look for to match them up with who you are, and then also if that's going to be a good fit for what you want?
Yeah, and I don't spend a lot of time on whether or not she's a good fit for you, because I trust that the reader, you know what flips your cookie, and you know what you like and what you're drawn to. I'm really interested in, does she have the bare minimum job requirements, job skills to be a partner in your life? Like, does she have things like clarity of communication, which let me talk about that one for a minute. We have this belief in our society, and my profession of psychology certainly advances this belief, that women are the superior communicators and that men are kind of dopey when it comes to communication. But when you start breaking it down, all it really boils down to is that men and women communicate differently. And so is this a person who can respect your way of communicating, can meet you halfway? And more importantly, are her communication skills going to hold up when there's a challenge in life? Because when they break down, then not only do you have a challenge to deal with, but now you have a relationship challenge to deal with as well. So it's really important that you look for the signs in a woman that says that she can communicate clearly, like assertiveness and inquisitiveness and just basic coping skills. These are things that I talk about. Maturity, that's another bare minimum requirement, because again, when you come to that inevitable bump in the road, you're going to want somebody on your team that knows that can handle herself and knows what she's doing and isn't going to fall apart, so that you don't have to deal with the problem and the problem of this relationship. So looking at things like, how is her resilience, and how can you start sizing that up early? Does she accept the way you think about the world and the way you approach problems, or is that going to be a conflict? And a basic question, is she good to you? So many guys are in abusive relationships, but there's not much help out there for them, and they kind of get laughed out of clinics and so forth and law enforcement if they do speak up. And so looking very carefully at that question early in the relationship, how is she treating the people around her, and how do her friends treat people around her? And then I guess the last third piece of this, does she have the bare minimum requirements, is stability, like basically mentally and emotionally stability. Like, does she understand what makes herself tick? Does she have basic mental health problems that she's not attending to, like addiction or anxiety or depression? And doesn't mean that she's a bad fit if she has those problems, but it's a bad fit if she's not dealing with them. And does she internalize responsibility? Does she take responsibility for the things that are going on in her life and the way people are responding to her, or does she put blame elsewhere? And basic characteristics like this. And then another big piece is, of course, personality disorders, because I've met so many guys who've got drawn into relationships with personality disordered partners, and that doesn't really register until down the road, because a lot of times dating someone with a personality disorder feels great at first because you're idealized and they're charismatic and so forth. But then eventually something bad happens and things fall apart, and then suddenly you're stuck with this person who's not handling themselves very well.
What are the signs of someone who has a personality disorder? What are some examples of personality disorders, and what are some of the signs that they may have it?
I think the biggest one out there in terms of conversations and particularly men talking about women is borderline personality disorder. Like, guys talk about this a lot, and it is diagnosed quite a bit more often more frequently among women than it is among men. But some of the warning signs, again, they don't show up until down the road. It's kind of tricky to detect, and you want to be really careful about saying that somebody has borderline personality disorder, because like even psychologists and physicians don't diagnose their spouses if they suspect that there's a problem. But some of the basic things to look for with any kind of personality disorder, whether it's narcissism, borderline personality, antisocial personality, dependent personality, that go through several of them in the book, is how are they talking about their past relationships? How are they treating their families? What kind of feeling do you get when you're around them? Like, do you feel like you are idealized beyond what's reasonable, which can feel really good, but it's a very dangerous spot to be in because there's only one way to go, and that's down? Or do you feel like one minute you're the good guy and the next minute you're the bad guy, and there's not much gray area there? Like, you're either good or bad. You get that kind of feeling. Or do you just get a kind of a hinky feeling about the way they talk about their past relationships? Like, if all of their past relationships fell from grace and they're all assholes and jerks, then guess what's going to happen to you when she's angry at you? Looking at really attending to what's going on around her and what her relationships have been like historically, because it's very difficult to rely on your feeling or our feeling about her in the beginning.
I guess if you do see some of these signs, these symptoms, is it time to hit the road, or is it something you bring up and say, you know, I think there may be an issue here? You may have, you know, borderline personality disorder. Like, how do you bring that conversation up without getting her pissed off or having a huge fight or something like that?
Just with inquisitiveness. I'm real big on just asking questions and being curious about things. Like, if she's saying bad things about all of her exes, I think that's a reasonable thing to ask. You know, I notice, you say something like, I notice that you seem to have a lot of bad experiences. What do you think's going on there? Or, I notice that you don't have very good relationships. You seem to be in conflict with a lot of people in your family. What's happening there? And just getting her to talk about it and seeing what you can suss out. And then whether or not it's time to leave or make some kind of recommendation for treatment or something, that's kind of up to you.
As always, if you haven't joined the Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook yet, do yourself a big favor and get on that right now. Connect with thousands of guys just like you who are looking to improve themselves every single day. This is the best Facebook group on the planet, totally free, and this is going to push you, motivate you, inspire you, give you tips, advice, and strategies for helping you master the biggest challenges in your life. EliteManMastermind.com will take you right to the group on Facebook where you can join. It's a closed group, which means it might take a couple minutes, a couple hours for you to get accepted in by one of the moderators or myself, but I promise you, we will get you in if you're not a spammer and you don't have a creepy profile. So go to EliteManMastermind.com if you haven't yet. Join the group. You're going to absolutely love this and join a collection of thousands of amazing guys just like you who are looking to improve themselves and help you out along the way.
And I guess going back to the other part, which was like the clarity of how she communicates, her assertiveness, the maturity, resilience, that type of thing, is it going to be tough to see those things in the beginning, especially when we're talking about this honeymoon phase, when we're talking about, you know, people being at their best, not revealing who they truly are, and, you know, kind of, I guess, putting on a facade in a lot of fronts and trying to be, you know, their best version of themselves? Is it going to be hard to discern, you know, what her communication is like, what her maturity level is really like, her clarity, resilience, that type of thing?
I think we need to use the strategies that women use, which is to look at how her relationships are going. Look at the periphery of what's going on with her, because we tend to look at one thing. We look at her. Guys will look at her and idealize her, and I got to have this woman. She's the perfect woman for me, and not really paying attention to what's going on in her other relationships. So with things like resilience, you can start watching that immediately, like just with how she handles it when you've made a reservation at a place and you show up and the reservation got lost, or she tried to get an Uber ride and the Uber guy didn't show up. Like, how does she handle that? Does she handle that like a grown-up, or is she got a little bit of a two-year-old in her? Because if she's got a little bit of a two-year-old in her with the little things, then there's a possibility that she's not going to handle the big things very well.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. At what point, I guess, though, do you do kind of a lot of these things start to add up? Like, you know, maybe she acts like a two-year-old when the Uber doesn't come on time, or maybe she gets pissed when the waiter doesn't bring her the right wine, or, you know, maybe there's signs that she has some type of borderline personality disorder, or maybe her stability isn't quite there. You know, she's bouncing between jobs all the time. Like, at what point does a guy kind of sit back, take all this information in, and decide, you know, I really love this, or I really like this woman, I'm starting to love her, I want to kind of fight through these things and you know, work on them with her, or, you know, I really like this woman, maybe even I do love her, but this is like kind of too much for me, and I'm going to break it off.
And it's really a personal choice. I do give some guidelines in there. I guess really my main guideline is to ask you the reader, if you've identified that she's got a problem, and it doesn't have to be a big thing like borderline personality disorder. It could be low-grade depression. Is she, number one, is she willing to treat it? And if she's not willing to treat it, then you really got to think seriously about whether or not you're ready to take that on, because it's not going to get better if she's not treating it. But then if she is getting a treatment, or maybe it's something more serious, like some rough substance abuse or personality disorder, which a lot of people are really resistant to treatment if they have personality disorder, but something bigger than that, bigger like that, going through the treatment can make her a much better partner, believe it or not. It can make her more insightful. It can make her more, can help people who go through substance abuse treatment, for example, and they're successful at it. They tend to drop all the ego about looking at what they're, the bad things that they're bringing into the relationship or the destructive things that they're doing in their life. And they can be very good partners because of that, superior partners because of that. But if she's not willing to do that work, then none of that's going to happen. And you do have a tough choice. Like, am I going to tough it out with this person? And there's no shame. I say this to women and I say this to men equally. There is no shame in saying to somebody, look, you're not willing to get treatment for this problem. I can't have it in my life. I'm sorry. I love you. I'm going to miss you, but I got to go.
Really quickly on the, personality disorders, it's a very fascinating topic as well. But what are some of the treatments for that? Is it typically just antidepressants and like cognitive behavioral therapy type thing? Or is there anything else that that has been effective in your experience?
Well, it depends on depends very much on this disorder in question. So for something like narcissism or antisocial personality disorder, these folks typically don't want treatment because they think things are going fine and it's everybody else that needs to change. And so it's not a great prognosis in those, although people have, once they decide they need to get into treatment because they realize that things aren't working out very well, then it can be done. With borderline personality disorder, it's a combination of individual therapy and dialectical behavior therapy, which is a group therapy that basically helps a person change the way they relate to people and change the way they manage their emotions. That's very hard work. But again, somebody who goes through this successfully is probably going to be a pretty insightful partner when they come out the other side. Mm-hmm. And then there's other disorders, you know, anxiety related, and this doesn't even need to be a disorder, but like a dependent personality disorder, where a person's very anxious around other people and they latch onto you and get really clingy. Probably just an anxiety treatment, CBT, and mood management and that sort of thing.
So I guess the next question too then that comes up is, if you do have to break it off with someone, you know, someone that you're starting to get close with, maybe even a girlfriend, or maybe even if you've waited to the point where you've already married this person and it's kind of, you know, grown on you to the point where it's, you know, making you miserable or unhappy, and you do have to break up with this person or break it off with them, what is your tips, I guess, your best advice for the breakup part of it, the breakup portion? Like, what is the, I guess, the strategy behind a successful breakup?
I'm always big on giving people options. And so if you have to break up with someone, giving them the choice, you know, do you really want to know what my why? And you know, it's, once you pose that question to somebody, of course they're going to want to know why. But I think you have to kind of gauge how much truth they can take. But the kind thing to do when you're breaking up with someone is to give them a little bit of honesty, kindly, about why you're breaking up with them. But as far as being married and wanting to break up, that's what this whole book is about, avoiding that, because you don't want to be in that position where potentially the person that you're divorcing is not the same person that you married, and you're going to be dragged into a family court system that by all appearances, is fairly well rigged against men. I mean, that we want to avoid at all costs, and that's the purpose of this book.
Yeah, you mentioned this a couple of times, but yeah, I just want to concur with that assessment. It's totally rigged against guys at this point, man. I know so many men who've gotten really screwed over by the court systems, and you know, especially in divorce time, you know, all their money goes to women. Unfortunately, it's not like, you know, this isn't sort of a bashing women episode here either. It's just honestly, like, looking at the facts, it's really totally rigged against men in this day and age. But I guess that is another topic for another day.
Yeah, and the book is not a bashing women book at all. I love them, and I have a great marriage. I sort of, in spite of myself, I married very well and realized later how lucky I got with it. But we're not bashing women here. It's about making good choices. And yeah, I've met so many guys who have just had their lives devastated because they found themselves in the family court system. And as I was writing this book, I did a lot of interviews and so forth, and I tried to take a measured tone to the family court system. My attitude about most things is that it's going to work out basically based on the attitude that you bring into it. So if you walk in contentious and you're the man, you're probably not going to do very well. But I had a couple of female family law attorneys correct me and say, no, the courts are biased against men. It doesn't matter how men show up. It's not going to work out well for them.
Mm-hmm. Do they give you any advice for, I guess, the right way to act, the right way to proceed in that situation?
Yeah, I get there's a quite a fairly lengthy section in the book where I talked to Sharon Lyko, who's a family law attorney here in Denver, and she gave some really good advice on how to approach marriage. And again, the work is on the front end, like things like handling, having a prenuptial agreement, but also just some common sense stuff that she's seen a lot of guys overlook. Like, for example, don't let her control the finances without knowing what's going on. The finances should be a joint effort. And the reason for that kind of advice is that when you show up in family court and they're looking at all the numbers, because, you know, you have to go through discovery and you have to bear everything, and they see that she has been spending this much money on clothes and this much money on vacations, and that she hasn't been working, and that she's got accustomed to this lifestyle, and you had no idea what was going on. Well, guess what? You get to keep paying for it. Because being very attentive to what's going on with the money and the children and being totally involved. And again, this is all work that you do on the front end so that you can avoid that horrible day in family court.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about a prenup, too. So you definitely recommend all guys get that before marriage?
Oh, yeah. And I'm not a lawyer, so it's not really my place to say. But Sharon Lyko, yeah, she's don't even consider doing it without a divorce or without a prenuptial agreement. She gave the story, and I tell it in the book real briefly, about somebody who came into a marriage, a man who came into the marriage, and he had some assets, and he wanted a prenuptial agreement. And she wouldn't do it, but he married her anyway. And then he started pushing for a postnuptial agreement, which is fine and valid and everything. But again, she wouldn't do it. And in the meantime, his assets appreciated quite a bit. And of course, they divorced, and she walked away with most of it.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
Man, it really does suck. I guess it does bear the question, though, like these – I don't know – it's like, you know, you push for the prenup and it's like you're already setting yourself up for failure. But on the other hand, it's like you have to have a prenup because it's that insurance that if anything goes wrong, I mean, the divorce rate now in America is over 50%. It's like, you know, you're completely screwed, especially how we just kind of, you know, talked about the bias towards men. Like you are screwed if you get divorced without a prenup. But then again, it's like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, one of those catch-22s.
Well, I think there's a way to talk about it, and you start talking about it early. And again, it's that theme of doing the work on the front end, that when you start dating a woman and you think this might be somebody that you want to spend your life with, you can start dropping little hints now, like so-and-so got married and they got a prenup. What do you think about that? And if she has a hissy fit about prenups, then you've got some valuable information there. And you can even say things early in the relationship like, you know, I noticed this news story and this guy really got screwed. I would never get married without a prenup. What do you think about that? And, you know, just having these conversations early when it's less threatening. You don't want to be having these conversations during the engagement or as she's moving her stuff into your apartment.
Yeah. Well, when I'm going to get married, I'm going to refer my future wife to this episode because I am absolutely getting a prenup.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate. You know, it definitely sucks some of the romance out of it, but it's the world we live in.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the facts, man. Over 50% divorce rates going up. It's, you know, there's a lot of factors in that too. It's not like, you know, you're just blaming, you know, everything on her or blaming everything on the fact that you two can't get along happily for the rest of your life. It's just being smart, I think, about it and putting the right things into place. Going back, I guess, jumping back to the preparing yourself before the marriage thing. When you start dating a woman, when you start going out with her, when is it the right period of time, or is there a right period of time, a right way to know if it's good to move in with each other? Like, is there a certain period of time to move in, you know, after the honeymoon? Is it before the honeymoon? Do you want to kind of wait till after that to make sure? Because I know the dynamic in relationships oftentimes change when two people are a lot more, you know, close to each other and around each other all the time, and especially that moving in together thing.
Yeah, if your audience gets nothing else out of this episode, I wanted to get this point that moving in is a really tricky move, cohabitating. Now, it depends on how you do it. There's no right or wrong, or I can't say that it's right or wrong to do it. But what I can tell you from the research is that it's a really bad idea to test the relationship, and it's a really bad idea it's a really bad idea to move in to test the relationship, and it's a really bad idea to let moving in just happen to you. Give you a little bit of background here. There's some researchers in Denver, in my hometown, and also some researchers in Australia that have been looking at this question of cohabitation. And the researchers in Denver have really been looking at this question for a long time. And what they have found is that when people start blindly moving in together, meaning she gets her tampons under your sink, and then she starts taking up a little bit of your underwear drawer, and then she starts moving a little bit of stuff in, and then before you know it, you're off to IKEA and you're buying furniture together, and then maybe you're moving in because, quote unquote, it just makes sense, and then maybe you're getting on a credit card together, and then you're getting a car and you're getting a puppy, and you're doing these escalating steps that essentially turn you into a husband. And my advice to guys is, do not let that happen to you. Think of yourself in one of three categories. You are either her boyfriend, you are her fiance or her intended, or whatever label you want to put on that, or you are her husband, her partner, whatever label you want to put on that. These in-between stages where you're kind of moved in, or you're moved in but you don't really have a commitment, or you moved in but you don't really know what had happened, why it happened, or how it happened, just suddenly now you have this woman living in your house. These are really dangerous, and you need to be very intentional about what your role is in her life and what she is to you. She's your girlfriend, she's your fiance, she's your wife, or whatever equivalent labels you want to put on that. Do not do this in between stuff where you're just sort of sliding into a relationship, or you're moving in to test the relationship, because outcomes are very bad. Now, having said all that, if the two of you have a plan, you've discussed it, and yeah, you are the right people for each other, and your intention is to be together for the duration, whether that's new marriage or whatever it is. And if moving in is a part of that plan, then the outcomes are fine. Moving in doesn't damage or help the outcomes, because you've already made that commitment. It's moving in without the commitment and without the intentionality, very dangerous for guys.
Why is that so dangerous? Is it because it's an unknown thing, and women, or even I guess men, can overstep their boundaries, can start doing things, and then like one of the partners is felt like they're, or feeling like they're walked all over, or feeling like their needs aren't being met? Is it that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I think that's that kind of dynamic. Yeah, that can definitely creep in when you're not being intentional about the relationship, and then people start getting resentful. But when I say it's dangerous, I'm just talking statistically, that when guys let this happen to them rather than being intentional about it, that's when they end up in family court. That's even if they're not married, you know, they can end up in court because she has decided that she wants part of your business because she's been helping out. This is a case that actually that case isn't in the book, but I did know a case where a guy brought a woman into his house and brought her into his business, and he couldn't get rid of her without basically liquidating the business and giving her a big chunk of it. So, and he didn't plan for that. That just happened. So when I say it's dangerous, I'm really just talking about statistically, it works out poorly for men when you let it happen to you.
Okay, that makes sense. What about the dynamic of having kids with a woman? Like, how does that change the relationship? How does that complicate things?
that ties you to her forever. So if you're going to have kids with a woman, you better make sure that she has passed the test and that she has the basic job requirements. And because if she's, and you could say this about men too, so this isn't a sex, well, maybe it's a sexist statement, I don't know, but it would apply equally in the opposite direction, that if she's a little bit nutty, she's not going to get less nutty after she has the kids. And the same thing for the men, you know, woman could say the exact same thing. And in fact, that where kids are concerned, that's where women really need to be attentive to risk, because the big risks to us are that we end up in family court, that we end up supporting people for the rest of our lives that we didn't intend to support. The big risk for women is having a deadbeat dad. And so they need to be very attentive to that.
Yeah, I don't know if we covered this or not, but what is the most important emotional skill to look for in a woman? How do we spot this before we jump into a relationship? I know I wanted to ask you that earlier. I don't know if we had touched on it or not, but is there like one specific important skill to look for?
We touched on it, but I didn't yammer on about it like I would like to. So this is my opinion. So much of the book is very research-based, and I've interviewed people, I've consulted the literature. This is my opinion, so take it as such, that the most successful relationships are the ones where both people internalize responsibility, meaning they're not victims of the other person. They're not victims of their history or their life. They're not victims of anything. They're captains of their ship. And this is, in my opinion, the single most important trait to look for in a woman is, does she internalize responsibility for her life? I could talk about it. Actually, I could talk about this all day, but internalizing, you know, if she's an externalizer, meaning that she's blaming the world for what happens to her, then one thing that you can count on as the man in her life is that eventually you are going to be blamed for what's going on in her life. And she needs to have that ability to recognize what the common denominator is. So if she's, you know, every job that she's had, her boss has been a jerk, or every boyfriend she's had, her boyfriend has been a jerk, or every landlord has been a jerk, then that's probably saying something about her. Probably says that she's not a great employee, or she's not a great girlfriend, or she's stiff landlords on the rent. And if she can't see that she's got a pattern of relationships going bad and she's the central element of that, then again, you're the one that's going to be to blame at some point when things go south.
Definitely a good characteristic, I think, for all people to have, but especially I think in your partner, if you're really looking to settle down with them and have a future with them, it's important that they have this.
Yeah, not only is their life going to go better, which means your life is going to go better, but the arguments are going to go better. If you're dating somebody who can actually look at what they're bringing into the equation, then the arguments are going to be short and they're going to be productive.
Sean, I know you kind of talk about this or have talked about random like psych test questions before. What's the deal with the ink blot test? I know that's something you've mentioned in one of your, I think, articles in the past.
Yeah, way back on my website, it used to be called Iron Shrink. Got a little tired of that name, so it's now DocSmith.co. But I used to just take random questions, and one of the questions I took was, do they still use inkblot tests? And yeah, we do still. I don't, but there are psychologists who still use inkblot tests. And it's not really my thing because get a little technical. I'm a behaviorist, and so I prefer inductive thinking rather than deductive thinking, meaning you start with the specifics and you work up to what you think is going on. And inkblot testing has just probably thousands of studies. There's a certain set of inkblots that have probably thousands of studies behind them. And so there's a lot of good deductive information that people can use. So I show you inkblot, and if you see an alien, then you can correlate that with other people who've seen aliens, and it might say something. And then when you add up all of these correlations over a long series of inkblots, then supposedly it gives you a sense of some basic personality traits. And there's something to it. It's just not my thing.
Mm-hmm. What about like random dreams? How much emphasis do you put into people who tell you about their wacky, crazy dreams?
Not much, because what we know about dreaming is that it's basically what you're doing when you're sleeping is the mind is literally taking out the trash. It's cleaning up chemical residue and so forth, but it's also working through memories of the day and compiling information and deciding what to keep and what to throw out. And so dreams are, it's just a product of that. And they're interesting and they can give some insight into what you're worried about or what you're excited about. But beyond that, I don't put a lot of emphasis on the symbolism of dreams.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I think it's disappointing to hear. A lot of guys are probably hoping that their dreams meant a lot more than they actually do. But definitely an interesting topic. Is there any other random like psych questions like that? I know like the common ones kind of stick out, like those ones. Is there any other ones that you've been asked like similar to those?
Oh, let's see. Some interesting questions I've been asked. I got asked one time. A guy asked me. He was going to be a new father. He was a new father. He had a new daughter. She was only 2 or 3 years old, and he was worried that he was going to be sexually attracted to her someday. And because the mother was attractive and he was a good looking guy, so he figured, well, my kid's going to be good looking. And he didn't want to be attracted to her. So he said, am I going to be attracted to this kid when I'm older? And so I hit the literature about fatherhood and pedophiles and so forth. And I guess what I garnered from the research was that if he has a good father-daughter relationship with her, then probably not, because he didn't have any previous indications. I actually know this guy, he gave me permission to write about it. He didn't have any previous indications of wanting to diddle little kids, and so there was no reason for him to be worried about it. And the main thing to focus on was being a good dad. Yeah. As it turns out, like 10 years later, she's starting to bud sexually, and he finds it repulsive. So he's
all right. That's good. That's a good, I guess, ending to that story.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, those are just a few, you know, really interesting, I guess, psych questions. And I'm sure there's plenty others. But yeah, as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, man, that's always been a fascinating topic to me, and I think is, you know, as well you. But kind of wrapping things up, man, and, you know, going back to the general theme of today's episode, is there sort of like a send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave our Elite Man listeners about relationships, about recognizing a good partner, a potential partner for a long-term relationship? Is there something you want to kind of leave our guys to kind of resonate on?
Yeah, one thing, an important piece that we really haven't touched on, and that is being honest with yourself about the woman that you're attracted to, because we do put on blinders, and women do it, but I think we do it a little worse. And so some specific tips for being honest with yourself is rejecting wishful thinking about what you hope she can be, listening to warnings from friends and family, because sometimes our friends and family will give us little hesitancies about this person that we're dating. And it's really easy, if people are being polite, to just ignore those. So listening to those warnings, respecting your intuition, because we have intuition too. We're just not taught to use it the way women are. Being honest about her bad behavior. When you see her mistreating the person at Starbucks or being a little shitty with them, well, that's what's in your future. So being honest about it, and being honest about her sexual appetite, because that gets to be a problem in marriages. Being honest about her approaches to money, rejecting white knighthood, which we haven't even talked about, but this tendency to want to rescue damsels in distress. If that's you, you got to get over that, or you're probably not going to have relationships, good relationships. Knowing when to tap out, if a thing's not working, being able to say, this isn't working and I need to move on, you know, that sort of thing. And the main thing, I guess, is using time to your advantage, because if you're with this person long enough and you get beyond that honeymoon phase and then you give it a little more time, her real personality will show up.
And Sean, is there a place you'd like our listeners to check out more about your work and also the book you just came out with?
Yeah, the book's in all the usual places, or you can find all of my stuff at docsmith.co.
All right, perfect, man. And guys, the book, the show notes as well, the book will be in the show notes. His site will be in the show notes as well. You can go to elitemanmagazine.com right on the homepage, as always, to check out this episode's show notes, or right on iTunes, where we have all the links to his book, his website, and all the other applicable resources. Dr. Sean, thanks again for coming on the show, brother. Really do appreciate it. It's been an awesome interview.
And, Justin, thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.